This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This Monopoly example, when I'm watching my kids play, the thought I had was, what if the money were real? What if it was tangible greenbacks, dollar bills, cold hard currency sitting on the kitchen table?
What's up, Billionaire University? It's me, Kirsten Tyrell, one of your fabulous hosts of the show, and I am bringing the heat today with the very first of three episodes in a series that we are doing with the incredibly wise and talented Adam Carroll. Adam came to us and had so many things that he wanted to share, and we knew immediately that this was not all going to fit into one episode, and we really wanted to give you as much value as humanly possible. So we asked Adam if he would be willing to spread his knowledge out over the course of a few episodes, and of course, he was awesome enough to oblige. So today kicks off that series, and what better way to begin than going back to the beginning and getting to the base level when it comes to understanding money with our kids. And I think you're going to find that even though we're talking a lot about how we can educate children, teenagers, about money and how to use it and how to understand it, some of these things are fundamental truths that we probably skipped through ourselves. And I really love this conversation because I homeschool three of my kids, and this has been a conversation that we've had a lot more frequently lately. This year, we have transitioned to them managing more of their money. And some of the things that Adam and I discussed today, I was really happy to know that I've started to implement already. So I feel like I'm on the right track. But I also got some insight onto where I can change things or deepen things and how we can start having more enlightened conversations when it comes to our finances and how I can empower my kids and help them to be prepared to take bigger risks as they get older. So whether or not you have kids, this is a really powerful conversation. And if you do have kids, obviously you're going to get some really great ideas. You're going to have some strategies that you can bring into your own home and implement with your family. And honestly, for me, I think what's really cool is whether or not you're going to have a family business where the kids are actually involved in the making of the money, it's really important to have conversations where they're aware that you are starting a business and that they see that some changes are going to be happening and that maybe your time is going to be used a little bit differently. And as a family, you can set some different financial goals. I know in the past when I've had to work and I've had big projects and I'm really spending a lot more of my focused energy on growing a business, it's been really, really powerful to involve my kids in an understanding of that so that they know what we're working towards. So when those rewards come, they understand and it's connected to the sacrifices that were made and maybe some of the things that we weren't able to do in the short term that are now making it possible to do some of these really cool things in the long term. So without further ado, I am so stoked for you guys to listen to this first of three episodes with Adam Carroll as we dive into talking to kids and helping kids understand money. So let's get to it. Hello, Adam. Welcome to Millionaire University. I am selfishly very excited to have this conversation with you, but I know our listeners are going to benefit greatly from a conversation about money. We're going to be doing a three-part series with you, which is going to be amazing, every episode packed with value. So thanks for coming on here and sharing your expertise with us and being willing to just open the door to have these conversations that need to be had around money, saving, debt, all of the things.
It is my pleasure to be with you, Kirsten, and just know that wherever our conversation goes, there's bound to be value galore. So I'm excited for your listeners and I'm excited for us just to see where we take this.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to give, I want to kind of know your backstory and we're going to talk about a lot of things. And I think it's really important for people to know, where does this authority come from? You've built your whole career on helping people and sharing this knowledge. Yeah. And so I want to hear the story and I want to know where all of this knowledge
came from. Oh gosh, school of hard knocks is probably the simplest answer. But I grew up in a household where my mom tended to be very scarcity minded and my dad was very abundance minded. And so I had this very duality environment that I was growing up in. And I chose to believe more like my dad, that the world was abundant, that we were all creators in this universe. We could create whatever we wanted. But the reality of their situation that I didn't know was they were living on credit cards for a lot of the extra spending throughout the year when I was in middle school and high school. And they would count on a Christmas bonus at the end of the year to cover the credit card debt. And so I witnessed that growing up. And I went to college, got my first credit card in exchange for a 2-pound bag of peanut M&Ms. I don't know if you remember the day when they had a table set up in the student union at the university I went to. And if you signed up for a credit card, you could get a 2-pound bag of peanut M&Ms. So I thought, what the hell, let's do it. And that was the start of my journey in going deep into debt. So by the time I graduated from college, I had 30 grand in student loans. I had $8,000 in credit card debt. The joke is I was upside down in my car. My dog had just died at home. My girl had left me at school. I sounded like every Dierks Bentley song ever written.
Yeah.
And I think it was then there was a really critical conversation that I had with my then girlfriend, who is now my wife of 24 years. But she said to me, Adam, get rid of your debt or I'm going to get rid of you.
Ooh, and that's an ultimatum.
It was an ultimatum and it was harsh. And honestly, Kirsten, I looked at my situation and I looked at hers. She had 4 grand in the bank. She had a paid off car. She was on scholarship. And I thought, well, maybe she knows something that I don't know. And so we came together and she was working a night package as a nurse and she'd leave for work and I would crack open money books and I just started reading. And over the course of about 2 years, I read 120 books on personal finance and slowly started applying each and every one of them to the extent that we were debt free and about 24 months. And we didn't really look back from that point forward. It was about building a life that she and I both desired and one that we could raise kids in that we knew would be different than the households we grew up in.
Wow. Okay. So when you have those patterns that have come to you through the way that your parents raised you with money, it is pretty natural. I've seen that in my husband and myself. You continue that. But anytime you're adapting those new habits, it sounds like it took a couple of years. And you said something pretty critical I think everybody needs to hear. You read the books, but you implemented a little bit at a time. You actually put into practice some of those things that you were reading, which is the actual way to learn. You don't learn just from reading a book. You get information from books, but you learn by actually putting those things into action. So how uncomfortable was that time period for you of actually using money differently and starting to save and spend differently?
It was uncomfortable in the sense that I was rewiring some of the patterns I had, but I had the good fortune of being partnered with someone who she was normally naturally frugal. And we would go out to eat and she'd say, do you want to split an appetizer? Do you want to share an entree? Should we have water now? And we'll go grab a $3 bottle of wine on the way home. Those are the kind of decisions we were making. And it was okay because she and I were living in Denver, Colorado, and we had a small friend group there. But the majority of our family and friends were out of state. And so it was challenging in the midst of it, but easier given that we weren't surrounded by people who are like, let's go out, let's go to a concert, let's go here and there and everywhere and spend money. And we were living by this mindset, and I would call it almost a philosophy, that was basically, if you do for 2 years what most people won't do, you can do for the rest of your life what most people can't do. And we just decided for 2 years, we can live on less. We can drive old cars. We can coupon. We can do all the things that we need to do so that we can claw back all of the income that we were sending away in interest payments and keep that for ourselves and use that to build real wealth. So it was difficult, but on the surface, relatively simple. We weren't doing super complex things. We were doing really simple things. And when you do simple things over and over again, they begin to compound upon themselves.
Yeah. I think that is another key that a lot of people miss, because you might see this mound of debt and you think, oh my gosh, we have to do something so extreme, or I need to win the lottery. That's the only way out of this, or I'm never going to be happy because I'm going to have to lose everything. And living on a budget sounds so limiting to most people. Yeah. It feels just like lack and going without.
Totally.
When really it's actually an investment into having more and being more stable and having a better future. But we're also living in a time when there's a lot of instant gratification and that's become harder and harder. So this was how long ago that you were able to get to that point, and have you maintained that since? Have you had any ups and downs when it comes to debt and saving?
I would say no on saving, no ups and downs on savings. We've always been really good at that. The debt has come and gone depending on what we're doing at any given point in time. But honestly, Kirsten, it has not been the thorn in our side that it was when we were in our early 20s. And part of that, to be quite candid with you and your listeners, it's about having a really long-term view, a long-term perspective. Because it occurred to me when we were blasting away our debt, and I'm going to be honest, it was my debt. Jen, my wife, was like, you had fun accruing this. I did not. So this, let's just get rid of it. And it occurred to me that I was borrowing from future me when I was buying those things on credit. And we do this all the time. I think society actually is lured into this idea that debt is normal and natural and good, and you should use it to buy cars and furniture and clothing and food and everything else. We're going to borrow to buy and we'll worry about it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And the problem that I have with that as I started digging into the debt payoff journey was I want future me to love present me. I want future me to be like, that dude was awesome because he set me up for the life that I'm living. And I look at where we're at today and feel very blessed in the environment we're in and the net worth and the assets we've created. But it was Adam of 2 decades ago that started this. And I think for people who are struggling to get out of debt or become a millionaire, one of the things you have to realize is you can't borrow from future you and believe you're going to achieve the level of success you probably strive to. Now, borrowing comes in all shapes and sizes. So if we're talking about borrowing to buy rental properties and all of that's a different animal. I look at debt as debt is either costing me money or it's making me money. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to add, if I'm going to add debts, I'm going to add the debts that are making me money on a monthly basis. And I avoid all debts that cost me money on a monthly basis.
I think that's something I keep seeing, especially on social media now, is life's short anyway, and we are not doing ourselves that justice, and that future self of us is going to look back and say, what were you thinking?
Totally.
And you don't have to think too hard. I mean, I do that now where I'm like, what was she thinking a few years ago? If I had only then right now I wouldn't be struggling with this. And my husband and I we've had a lot of roller coasters where we've made very little money and we've made a lot of money. We've hit the millionaire mark. And it's funny, the amount of money you make doesn't change that inherent understanding of how to use money and how to save it and how to spend it wisely. That doesn't just come because you have more dollars in the bank.
Totally.
And so that's something we're still working through, is gaining that financial wisdom. And it's something that we want to pass on to our kids because, like I said, it perpetuates. You typically take the habits of your parents and you continue them because it's what you've known. So how have you guys, I know this is a huge thing for you, you've given a TED talk about this, so I want to go into that with really helping your kids to become more money wise. So what has that looked like for your family?
Oh, wow. Well, I love this topic, first of all, because there's nothing I like talking more about than my children, who are all insanely cool in their own way. But, you know, when they were young, they would take in what we were doing. And kids do that unconsciously, subconsciously. We're all recording all the things that are happening around us. And I've seen science that says we're taking in up to 1 million bits of information per second at our subconscious level. So every comment made to kids, you don't need that. Or, no, we're broke, we can't afford that. Those kind of comments, they seep into a child's psyche. And it really begins to influence who they are and who they are from a money personality standpoint. And so I think if I were to go back in time and talk about when this really occurred for my kids, my youngest was 6 and my middle son was 8, my daughter was 10. And I'd come back from a speaking engagement where I had been on college campuses for probably the last 3 or 4 days. And I was delivering a program called The Money Game. And it was all about how do you win the game of money that we're all playing all the time. And I was noticing that college students were making decisions around money, but they were making very uninformed decisions. And largely it was because either their parents made all the decisions for them, or they had sort of been thrust into this adulting world before they were ready for it. Like parents are making all the decisions until 18. And then they're like, okay, now you're on your own. And it never taught them anything about money. And it was one particular thing, Kirsten, that struck me. This college campus I was on, there was a fingerprint reader to get into the dining center. So when I was in college, you used your ID, your student badge, and you would swipe in. And every swipe was a meal, part of the meal plan, and you'd had X number of swipes per semester. Well, this place, it was a fingerprint touch. And I was like, I bet these students have no idea how much it costs to get in here. And so I started asking them, how much is it to buy food in here? And they were like, that's $7. And someone else told me 12, and somebody else told me 17. And I was like, it's probably somewhere in between, and it depends on your meal plan and all of that. But the lion's share of them had no clue how much they were spending because it was super abstract. It's just a fingerprint. And my dad had always said that college was a four-year break from reality, that there was, it was like you were in this environment where nothing was real.
Yeah.
And I came home and I was playing Monopoly with my kids one Saturday, and they were playing just slightly outside the rules of the game. They were like buying each other out of jail, and they were loaning each other money to buy properties. And the whole time I was like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, we just want to play the game, Dad. And I thought in the moment, I wonder if they're playing this way because the money isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what started it.
Wow. Yeah, I definitely have seen my kids have a skewed sense of how much things cost. And we've recently started doing some things where they have their own little card and they have their money. They have to earn their money and they spend it. And my son actually went to an arcade and I said, you're spending your own money to do this. And he came home and he was like, I don't ever care to go there again. I spent $25, Mom. I just did arcade games and played two rounds of laser tag and it was $25.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, interesting. So the next time that invitation came around, he thought twice about how much things actually cost. And when Mom and Dad are always footing the bill, you just think, oh yeah, that's a lot of money, or it's not a lot of money. We totally have enough for that. But that reality check of, okay, let's look at this for real. How much is this costing? And how hard is it to make that much money?
Totally.
My son is starting to earn his first wages as he does little odd jobs. And at first, like, oh, I'm a big spender. I'm going to buy my friends everything. And then he's suddenly realizing that's not replenishing as fast as you're spending it. Yeah, it's a very different thing, especially virtually now, right? I mean, Monopoly was
kidding.
That exact thing. It's fake money. We're all just playing with numbers on a screen.
And I think it's even more impact for young people because it's numbers on a screen and we don't even see it. I remember writing or watching my parents write out checks at the grocery store.
Yeah.
And they would put in the check register, how much the check was and all of that. My mom would add up to the penny every time. My dad didn't. He would just write the checks down and didn't balance it. But it was real. It was somewhat real to me because I knew there was something happening. Today, how long does that transaction take, Kirsten, to pay for something at the grocery store?
I mean, it's instant. And I heard your TED talk. I think you said this on your TED talk the first time you used Apple Pay. I had the same reaction. I'm like, I'm so old right now. I'm blown away that my phone can just scan instantly. There it goes.
Totally.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We're in a different age. And for teenagers that are growing up in this, and even younger for that matter, we have to get to a point where money becomes very real. So this Monopoly example, when I'm watching my kids play, the thought I had was, what if the money were real? Would they play differently if the money were real? Because they were playing with ratty, torn slips of paper.
Yeah.
And they could care less how much they were giving each other, pink, orange, green, whatever it was, they were just flipping the paper back and forth. But what if it was tangible greenbacks, dollar bills, cold, hard currency sitting on the kitchen table? So I added up how much it would cost to play a game of Monopoly. And it was $1,500 in starter capital per person. There's five of us, that's $7,500. I figured the bank would need $2,500. And we sat down and we played an all cash game of Monopoly with 10 grand in cash on the kitchen table. And my kids are 6, 8, and 10 at the time. So it was more money than they'd ever seen in their entire lives.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was nuts. Now I'll tell you, my wife was like, take no pictures. Post nothing on the internet. I don't want anyone to know this money's here. And we played the game, but I played with this hypothesis that they would play differently when the money was real in front of them. Hmm. And true to form, all three of my kids played differently than they normally played. My daughter, who never bought property, started buying property because she saw cash flow happening. Hmm. My middle son would buy the railroads and the utilities and Boardwalk and Park Place. And when we started using cash, he bought Oriental and Baltic Avenue, which are right after you pass go, and they're cheap properties.
Yeah.
My youngest son, who'd buy everything that he lands on with no exception, started counting ahead, how much is rent on this, how much is rent on this, and then recounting his money over and over again. And at the end of the game, my 8-year-old bankrupted all of us, my wife and I included, by buying Baltic and Oriental and Baltic Avenue, putting houses and hotels on those properties, and literally playing the game the way it was meant to be played. And at the end, we had 24 properties, $6,800 in cash. And he now knows the meaning of the phrase, making it rain, because he did that over everybody. But it was
That's
really
so
wild
awesome.
To watch them play and specifically how to watch them play with real money. So
yeah,
I echo your sentiment that when the money becomes real, it changes the way kids interact with it.
Yeah, 100%. So how did you go from that Monopoly game into, because your kids are older now, how old are they at this
point? So today they are 16, 18, and 20. They're 10 years removed from that game.
Okay, so what's happened in the last decade? And you and your wife had this experience where you understood money and then having that aha moment of, wow, like they probably are further ahead than most kids by having more wise and trying to be more intentional with money, but still have to learn those lessons for the first time. So how did we go from the Monopoly game to, I'm assuming now they're pretty financially smart. What was that journey like?
They are. I'm really proud of each of them because they could all stand on their own 2 feet financially right now if they wanted to. And so the way it occurred was we got done with the Monopoly game and I said to my wife, what did you notice? And she said, they are far more conservative with their money than they are with our money.
Hmm.
And this would be true of any kid, right? I mean, your son would rather spend your money than his. That's a no-brainer. I would rather spend my dad's money, candidly, than my own money.
Yep.
But the reality was, we were like, okay, well, what if we start pushing the money decisions down to them?
Mm-hmm.
And the way it kind of organically was created was, I'd had a conversation about a week earlier with a young man named Carlos, who was at a school in Texas. And Carlos told me, yeah, Adam, when I was 15, my dad said, we'll give you $50 a month, we'll give you food, and we'll give you shelter, but the rest is up to you. Hmm. And I was like, what does that mean? He goes, toiletries, gas, insurance, cell phones, computers, anything I wanted to do for fun with my friends, all of it was on me. And I said, what was that like, Carlos? And he goes, I hated my parents for a year. He goes, I thought they were punishing me, right, for a year of my life. He goes, and then at 16, something occurred to me was that they were giving me this great responsibility, but also freedom, because I was watching my friends have to go to their parents and be like, can I get $20? Can I have this? Can I have that? And their parents would lure it over them like it was a form of control in essence. Oh. And he goes, and then I realized that I could buy the same clothes that my friends were buying, just buy them at Goodwill and Plato's Closet and resale shops. He goes, I realized that I could get scholarships in high school that would pay for my entire college career. And I go, where are you at now, dude? And he goes, I'm 20. I have my first 2 years of college paid for through scholarships. I went to a community college because it was cheaper. He said, I'm going to finish my career at a 4-year school, but I'll have scholarships for all of that. And I have $20,000 sitting in the bank right now waiting for
me. Wow.
And I came home from that conversation. I told my wife, and she's like, you got to tell Piper about this. And our daughter was, I think, 13 or 14 at the time. And I said, Piper, I got to tell you the story about this kid I just met. She goes, oh my gosh, Dad, are you going to do that to us? And I said, no, honey, I'm going to do it for you, not to you.
Great response.
So we, from the time they were like 6, 8, and 10, they were getting $1 per year of age per week in allowance, but the allowance would only come if they got their chores done.
Okay.
So it was 100% centered on chores being done. You get paid for the work. I didn't want them to assume they could get something for nothing, but I also want them to know that our house operates a certain way and everyone pitches in.
Yeah.
So there are different schools of thought around, is it allowance? Is it commission? Is it, you know, do you hire your kids, quote unquote?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some combination thereof, but there's got to be a reset button conversation where you say, hey, everybody, let's gather around the table. We're hitting the reset button because this is the way we were doing it. And this is the way we're going to do it now.
We'll be back right after a word from our sponsors. More and more entrepreneurs and investors are discovering the awesome franchise opportunities that exist across a variety of industries. Franchising can simply be the better path, and interest in franchising is at an all-time high. Lucky for you, John Ostenson, founder of FranBridge Consulting and a past Millionaire University guest, is here to help you explore the premier franchise opportunities today. John and his FranBridge Consulting team are part of the largest franchise brokerage in the U.S. and have vetted the market thoroughly. FranBridge is hands down the premier source for the best opportunities in the franchise world, including both active and passive opportunities. From tiny homes to youth soccer to industrial hoses to pets, senior care to mental health, and more. John has served as an Inc. 500 franchisor and is a multi-brand franchisee himself. and he does more placements than anyone else in the country. Sign up for a free consultation call with John today or get a free copy of his book, Non-Food Franchising, at FranBridgeConsulting.com. That's FranBridgeConsulting.com. Available in the U.S. and Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so everybody listening, obviously they're tuning into this episode or this podcast in general because they want to change their lives financially. They want to start businesses. They want to become millionaires, right? And so what if they're in that situation or they're in a situation where they're not even at the point yet where they can pay a substantial amount of their kids or their, you know, debt? Where else are some good places to start? Or what would you recommend if maybe you can't afford quite that much for allowance, but even just to start giving kids more responsibility and awareness over money?
Yeah, this is a great question because the USDA has some statistics that say that it will cost upwards of $280,000 to raise a child from 0 to 18.
Wow.
And if you think about that, how many kids do you have, Kirsten?
I have three.
Three, yeah. So there you go. It's almost $1 million, right, to get those kids to 18. And in my world, no child should cost $280,000 unless, as parents, you're, well, let's go into Target and we get something every time we go in there, which is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thought process behind people who are deeply in debt, one of the questions I would ask you, if you're struggling to figure out how would I even pay my children allowance, because we can barely make ends meet,
mm-hmm.
I would ask yourself, how much are you paying for your kids right now for the things that they could theoretically pay for if the money were theirs? And those things look like donuts on Saturday, going to McDonald's, buying things for their friends' birthday parties, going to the movies, going to a basketball game, going to the Little League fields and buying stuff at the concession stand. It's those $5 and $10 and $15 and $20 items that as a parent, I started realizing that's not on me, that's on you.
Yeah. Right.
And as a kid, one of the things I want them to realize is that the money is finite for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is an end. This is not an unending supply. Because if parents don't talk to their kids about money, guess what the kid believes about their parents' money supply?
It's just endless.
It's endless.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly it must be because my parents swipe their cards and it never stresses them out.
Mm-hmm. There's
always something there. So we started saying, hey, when they said, Dad, can we go get donuts? I'd say, well, I'll fly if you buy. I'll take you there, but you're going to pay for them. Or if we were at the baseball fields and I'd say, take your money because if you want something in the concession stand, that's your money. That's not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And they started becoming really savvy consumers, even to the extent, Kirsten, that when we said, if you're invited to a birthday party, we'll cover half of the birthday present. You'll cover the other half. Mm-hmm. But my kids would... they knew there was a Dick's Sporting Goods coupon in the Sunday paper. And they would go get the paper and take a $5 or $10 coupon out and go buy a basketball for $20 and have half of it covered on a coupon. And we put in five, they put in five, right?
Yeah.
So we would do that stuff all the time and then celebrate when they made a really good decision and how they were really frugal with their money. We set some other rules in place. And I think for families, this becomes really critical, is that we would say, listen, by the age of five, they had to have $300 in an emergency fund in a savings account at the credit union. By the age of seven, they had to have $400. By the age of nine, they had to have $500. And we specifically said it's an emergency fund because our goal was to begin setting the habit of putting away 10% or 20% of whatever they had until they hit that mark. And amazingly, when they hit 500, they were like, well, what would it be like to have 750 or 1,000? And then they got to 1,000. Well, I'm going to shoot for 2,000 now. So it was like the opposite effect of somebody who has a ton of credit card debt that just keeps swiping because it's easy to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I'm hearing too, and this is something I think I've tried to implement when I've looked at our finances and been like, oh my goodness, I can't pay for all these things and pay for this allowance because that's a stretch. And instead funneling what I was going to spend on those things anyway, and just kind of adding up what the expense of each child really is. And then really, in a way, saving us both money. Because once they're in charge of it, they're probably not going to say yes to every single invitation. They're not going to buy every single thing that I maybe was buying when I'm distracted or just agreeing to get them to be quiet. So the money starts stretching further. And all I'm doing is just funneling it through them to make the decisions. And
that's
not every kid, right? Like some are spending it all and some are stashing it away. Every kid is doing it a little differently, but they're all learning in the same way.
And I would add to that, that not only are they learning we are coaching them along the way. So it would be improper for me to say to parents, oh, just funnel money to your kids and let them go hog wild. We were at Target with them saying, okay, this Nerf hoop is $24 and you have a hoop down in the basement you haven't used in 2 weeks. Do you want to spend $24 on this fancy new hoop? Or do you want to just pull the one out of the basement that we have? And they'd be like, no, that'll probably work. Or we would say, you have 18 and this thing's $25. You're going to have to wait at least another week probably to get it. And they would say, can't you loan me the money? And our rule was, we don't loan money. I'm not a bank. I don't want you to get in the habit of instant gratification. And after a week or two, they would have forgotten all about the $25 item that they had to have when they were there. So there are lessons learned, but there's a fair amount of coaching on the parents' part where we would say, you made a really good choice. Piper, Nolan, or Davis would be like, you guys made a great choice on that thing. Now, my wife was always like, you're going to let him spend $15 on licorice. And I was like, it's his money.
He's got to do it. He's got to do at least one crazy thing, right?
Totally. And we'd say, we're going to hold back a couple bags. You don't need all three bags in your room. Or we're going to keep it in the kitchen and you can come get it when you want. But we would have some parameters around what they did. But deep, deep down, what I wanted them to do was to have some agency on their money. Because if they didn't have agency, they would feel like they were either beholden to mom and dad, that they were inept, or that they had to go around our back to get it, right? I'm going to go ask mom. And if mom says no, then I'm going to go ask dad. And I just didn't want to create that dynamic in our household. And as a result, I think the end has been, the end product has been three kids who are all fairly different with money, but all very responsible in how they make, keep, and grow their money.
Amazing. So aside from adding in some kind of a money system to your family and just being that example as parents, what are some other things that you would suggest to families who are wanting to help their kids create more knowledge and wisdom? Because unfortunately, it's not really taught in public school. I don't know if you've seen the really funny meme that says, I'm glad I learned about parallelograms in school. It's come in really handy this parallelogram season.
Yeah.
And I have schooled my kids. And I really, the other day, a few weeks ago, we were looking up stuff. We were getting to that point in math with one of my kids. And I was like, if I have to Google this, why are we learning about isosceles triangles and what parallelograms are? And most of school, even when you get to college, you have to have a desire to even learn finance to take classes like that. They're not they're not even a required part of your core curriculum. We're still doing math 10-10. How are we combating that and creating that education at home outside of just adding in those abilities to earn money?
Yeah, great question. I'll tell you a few ways. And I think if you have really young kids, one of the greatest things you can do, your in-laws, your parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, whomever, they want to shower young kids with stuff, birthdays and Christmas and whatnot. And we started telling them, listen, they have all the multicolored playthings they could ever want. Get them a book. And then if you want, here's a link to a 529 plan. And someday they will go to college and we would love, love, love to for them to know that they have some money set aside already. Yeah. So we turned the gift-giving seasons into deposit season for our kids. And our aunts and uncles and grandparents, they would all toe that line and be like, well, I wanted to get them something, so I got them this, and then we'll put $25 away. And even $10 or $15 or $20 or $25 at a time can add up to a pretty significant amount of money. When you think about a 529 plan for a kid, a young kid, could double two or three times by the time that child goes to college, if you're following the rule of 72. And so that's one way, if you have really young kids, turn gift-giving season into deposit season by opening a 529 plan and having your family donate to that. That's number one. Number two, and this is a big one, is that I did not want money to be a taboo subject at our house. So it wasn't like I went around saying, hey, here's what your mom made last year. Here's what I made last year. But we would say, do you guys know what the insurance costs are on this house? Do you have any idea what our grocery bill was from last week? And what I wanted them to know was what it costs for them to live life. Hey, we just took four kids to Great Clips. Do you know how much that cost? And they would guess. And they never got it right. It was always too low because they didn't have any concept of it. But as they got a little bit older and a little bit wiser, man, they got spot on the numbers. And we'd go out to eat and they'd say, can I figure out the tip? And we go, absolutely. And I'd slide the bill to them and they'd calculate the tip for me. So that was one way we would teach them. Mm-hmm. And then I started, as they got into teenage years, I would say, hey, what does it cost to go to Notre Dame? What does it cost to go to UT Austin? What does it cost to go to Pepperdine? What does it cost to go to the University of Iowa or Iowa State or UNI, right? Where I went. Mm-hmm. And the kids would guess what it cost to go to these schools. And again, my goal was to give them some sense of, here's how much it costs to go to college. And here's why we're saving what we're saving. And I think if I boiled it all down, Kirsten, all I was doing was contextualizing what we were doing with money, because young kids' minds can grasp the contextualization of that money.
Yeah.
But they can't grasp abstract ideas when it's, I'll give you a good example. You don't need that. Mm-hmm. Right? A parent who says you don't need that over and over again is going to create a kid who either, they will either deny themselves certain things in life when they get older, or they will go the opposite direction and they'll say, when I start making money, I'm going to buy whatever the heck I want because I can.
Yeah. Right? Oh, I've seen it go both ways for sure. Oh, man. So there's again, that pattern of perpetuating, or even just there's a phrase of, I am this way because my parents were this way, or I am this way because my parents were this way. It can go one way or the other. You can either become very irresponsible with, you know, that because you had irresponsible parents when it came to money, or you can choose to do the opposite. I feel like it's a little harder to do the opposite. You thankfully had a wife who was obviously raised a little differently and had the frugal background. And so that was a great benefit to you to choose a different path and go a different way. Those are really, really great tips. And I wanted to jump back to the 529 savings. It's been a long time. I know I started some of these accounts for my kids and they probably still exist. I have not been contributing to them. But for those, and a lot of this audience are people, we talk a lot about taking non-traditional paths when it comes to education. So if people want to start saving for their kids that way, but they elect not to go to college, is there anything else that can be done with that kind of a savings? Or do you know of any other accounts that would be smart so that they have options?
Yeah, it's a great question. The 529 plan has sort of evolved over the last several years or decade, two decades, I would say. Mm-hmm. Today, the 529 plan, if unused and in a beneficiary's name, so let's say your son is the beneficiary of the 529, he could actually withdraw it over time into a Roth IRA account. So the benefit is it's going to grow tax-free in a 529 with the intention of it being earmarked for college costs, which could be travel, books, lodging, tuition, whatever it may be. But it could also then be transferred into a Roth IRA, which then becomes tax-free growth into retirement. So it is a double duty account today.
Yeah.
That is one way. If you're a family that's don't really know that we're going to send our kids to college, you might consider doing things like overfunded cash value life insurance, because those accounts will grow at a fairly steady clip, typically 5 or 5.5%. And you can borrow the money out of those to use for whatever you see fit, be it education or housing or buying a property, buying a duplex or fourplex when the kid's old enough. And then in other accounts would be setting up just a traditional Roth IRA for a child and beginning to contribute to that kid over time. If you are a business owner, one of the greatest tax loopholes out there is you can pay your children up to $12,000 a year tax-free. And you could use up to $6,000 or $6,500, I think the number is this year, to fund a Roth IRA for them. So pull money out of the business, pay your child, put half of that into a Roth IRA for them for later. And theoretically, the other half could go into either an overfunded cash value, sometimes called infinite banking policy, or into a 529 plan. So there's lots of different strategies. But it's, I think at the heart of all of this is making sure that your kids understand that they will have responsibility for this money. And the earlier and more often you give kids that responsibility, the better they'll become at the $5 and $10 and $50 decisions. Cause at some point they're going to make $1,000 and $5,000 decision. And we want them to make that in an intelligent way.
Yeah. And it sounds like just starting to have these conversations now. Even if you have to start small, even if it's, okay, here's $10, how would you spend $10? And working up to consistently giving them money and seeing what they do with it, letting them make mistakes while the risk is not as high is so much better than later when they're playing with real money. I mean, it's real money now, but real money when it's their money, There's a lot, because there's a lot more risk involved. It's a much smarter place to start. And then starting to have those educated conversations, teaching them what they can do with it, different ways to use it.
They're all teachable moments. I mean, I will say that. Even when our kids were super young, we would go through the drive-through at the bank or the credit union, and we'd say, do you guys know what we're here to do? And this is what happens here. And these are the people inside and what's going on in the banking industry and all that. And it may sound corny to some people. And my kids may have been like, whatever, Dad, listening, half listening. But subconsciously, they're picking up on everything we're saying. So if we're making them all learning opportunities, hopefully they're going to become very savvy consumers as they go. Yeah. The one thing I'll add to this, Kirsten, is that I truly believe that young kids should be taken to the bank or a credit union, set up an account in their name, could be a youth account or a Kirby account or whatever they call them at those institutions. But I've heard of teenagers, 17, 18, 19-year-olds that don't yet have checking accounts. And they go to work for the first time and they're like, I don't know what do you mean a direct deposit slip and where should this go?
I don't know. Where do all the other monies go?
Totally. And it reminds me of the movie Big. Tom Hanks was in the movie Big years and years ago, where he gets his first paycheck and he goes to the bank and he's cashing it. And the guy's like, how do you want it? And he goes over and he consults with his little friend, like 420s, 200s, 35s.
Just exposure. And I love that you talked about that subconscious programming. I want to get deeper into this and really understanding where our comprehension and our energy and our understanding of money comes from. We're going to save that for the next episode because we, again, are doing a three-part series. So you guys will have to tune in to the next one where Adam and I are going to dive deep into money psychology. So hope you guys have enjoyed this conversation and you'll have to come back for more. Thanks, Adam, for giving us all the juice about kids and money.
See you soon.
All right, Millionaire University, I know you see what I'm talking about. Adam has so much value to bring to the table and I'm so excited that we get to continue to have more conversations with him on the next two episodes. Today's was so powerful and it really blew my mind to think about how simply changing the game a little bit when it comes to Monopoly, bringing real money to the table, had a complete effect on how those kids chose to play the game, how much more strategic they were, how much more intentional they were when it came to a game. And how often are we doing that in our own lives where we're just kind of playing the game of life and we're not really being that intentional? We're really in this autopilot mode when it comes to life and business and money. And just shaking things up a little bit can really change the way that you start to play the game of life. So I think it's a really great representation of how we can start reframing our thoughts, our opinions, and our beliefs around money, which is going to play beautifully into our next episode with Adam, where we're really going to get into the root of these money stories and understanding why we feel and think the way we do about money. So you are not going to want to miss that episode. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast and that you come back for more because Adam has so much more to share with us. And I cannot wait for you guys to tune into the next episode of this series. Thanks again, Adam, for bringing the fire on today's episode. And we'll see the rest of you guys very soon. Have a wonderful day.